This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. And we are joined now by a great friend who we always enjoy having on, although the circumstances are not nearly as fun this time around. Damon Mandalora, now with SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio, was one of the initial hosts on CBS Sports Radio, now, of course, the Xfinity Sports Network. But when CBS Sports Radio launched in 2012, DA was doing the overnight ship, or the overnight shift. He said it was from Spaceship. Who could tell? It was the middle of the night. Might have been. And sometime during the day from a regular old radio studio, John Feinstein did his show. The legendary sports writer, author, radio host, TV personality passed away today at the age of 69. So we bring in DA now to help remember Feinstein, who's also, of course, a contributor here to the Team 980 and 106.7 The Fan for a long time. DA, first of all, appreciate your time. Sorry that we're having to talk like this, but good to chat, my friend.
Yeah, you too. Good to catch up. And John was amazing, man. I mean, as you could imagine, working alongside a guy like that gave a new network instant credibility. It was a staff that really had some big hitters in it. But in terms of journalism, in terms of credibility within the sport from a real deep journalism standpoint, nobody had more of it on our staff than John Feinstein. And John, I thought, gave us a real air of legitimacy right from the jump. And, you know, for anybody that goes back with him, they know all of his books dating back to the 80s and the Season on the Brink with the Indiana Hoosiers and the Inside of Bobby Knight. But also for a 90s kid like me, you know, even though I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, I really started to consume sports media at the next level when I wanted to launch my own career. And his appearances on Sports Reporters, I mean, were kind of legendary. He had very fierce opinions, but he was also incredibly knowledgeable. He was embedded in so many different places in the sport that you knew, that he knew, the people that were decision makers and the coaches and the administrators, that was must-watch television. And then, you know, his coverage in the Post, and I'm sure his coverage for you guys as well. It goes on and on and on, but it was an incredible gift to work alongside a guy like that when we had just launched the network.
Do you remember like any of the meetings or anything like that and you guys being together and you looking around and you'd be like, all right, Feinstein, huh? I'm in the same room as him. We're going to be on the same network or any interactions like that, especially in the early days as you guys were about to get the network off the ground or we're just getting the network off the ground?
Yeah, I was rarely awake when he was because I was doing overnights, as you said. I was usually sleeping during working hours. But yeah, it was always a thrill to listen to his show or to hear snippets of the show that we would run as promos along the network. We were kind of doing our own little thing in the middle of the night, and we felt kind of loosely tethered to the network because, again, we were working when everybody else was sleeping and sleeping when everybody else was working. But that was always a thrill. But about a year and a half ago, before the 2023 football season kicked off, I had a chance to do a long-form conversation with him for a series that he did for Odyssey called New York Accent. And it was about people in sports that had some type of connection to New York. Either they grew up there or they played there or they coached there. And Feinstein was a New Yorker. He had grown up on the Upper East Side. And I had asked him about his time, you know, kind of growing up, and he was a Jets fan growing up, and he remembers going to Old Shea Stadium back in the early 70s and late 60s. He was all over those Joe Namath teams, and this was before Aaron Rodgers had played a game for the Jets. And I said, well, you must be thrilled. I mean, here, this could be it. And he cautiously said, I've been a Jets fan for too long. It'll take a lot more than a Hall of Fame quarterback to get me excited. He had kind of known, you know, and I just thought that was such an interesting piece of insight into John. He was certainly a fan at heart, but his journalism background made him a skeptic, made him a, I'll believe it when I see it. And I think that that came through in a lot of his work, and I appreciated that. You know, we live in a day and age now of sports media where a lot of people have big opinions, but they do not have inside info. And a lot of those opinions can be very negative. But again, it's everybody from the outside watching TV, consuming on social media, and then throwing grenades. The people that have the inside information are oftentimes really apologetic for the people that they cover because they need that access. And you hear them oftentimes being defenders, apologists. And he was cut from a different era, and I loved it. He had inside information on everything. And so he certainly would be of the ilk these days of cheerleading. But no way. He was so old school, and he was the opposite. The more he knew, the more cynical he became. And I liked it. I liked it that way because you knew he was shooting it to you straight. And that conversation was a thrill that we did that in September of 2023. We know how the Rodgers thing ended. He was right all along, and I got to talk to him about Bobby Knight, et cetera. And that was one of the big thrills. And he was always gracious with his time. Every time we asked him to come on my show, whatever time slot it was after I left overnights, you know, to talk about college football, college basketball, Army, Navy, whatever, he was always great on it. So he was always a really cool asset to have at the network and within the family.
Damon Amendolara, of course, the DA show, SiriusXM Sports Radio now, but helped launch CBS Sports Radio back in the day with John Feinstein with us here on the Hoffman Show. I was reading a little bit up on John, obviously, in preparation for today's show, and there's this great anecdote I think I read in the Post's obituary of him, their first version of it. I'm sure there's a much longer version that's up now. They've had a little bit more chance of time to fully flesh it out. But apparently when he wrote Season on the Brink, like this is obviously a transformative book in sports media, right? 1985 season, he goes, he's embedded with Indiana the entire season. And he writes this book that then Bobby Knight is furious about afterwards. And after being very close, getting all the access, being on the inside, Knight doesn't talk to him for like 8 years, apparently, after the book is published. And of all things, Damon, I don't know if you're familiar with the story, of all the things that Bobby Knight was upset about in that book, it was that he included the profanity. That was what got under Bobby Knight's skin. And I think it just showed, like, to me, that's the longest form version of the story you just told of, like, someone who is on the inside doing the work, doing the journalism, and then will put out the work and doesn't really care what the people who gave him all that access thinks about it.
That's exactly right. It underscores exactly what I was saying before. And, yeah, he told that story on that long form chat that I had with him 18 months ago. And I thought that was hysterical. And I think, as you said, transformative is a really good word to describe that book because it took everybody inside of a place that they simply could not get into. Nowadays, with 24/7 and Hard Knocks and social media of all these programs and et cetera, everybody kind of feels like they already have the inside. I mean, it's kind of part of the reason Hard Knocks is eroded to the point that it has from a relevancy standpoint. We see too much inside, but in 1985, there wasn't any of that. You couldn't go anywhere. And so to be embedded with Bobby Knight and the Hoosiers, you could understand at that time when he's larger than life, if it was kind of, a bit of, I don't want to say a puff piece, but some authors may have taken that opportunity to put Knight on the pedestal, to make him the new General Patton. Look how much he gets out of his players. He graduates all of his guys. They had won two championships until that point. They would win one a couple of seasons later. It would have been easy to portray him as the kind of leader of men that America would want in the Reagan 80s. And instead, it was unfiltered. It was crass. It was volatile. It was at times ugly. And he didn't care. And whether that meant he was going to lose the trust of the guy that he was covering or be on the outside looking in for a long time or lose the trust of other coaches that he would probably try to profile afterwards, I would imagine, it didn't matter. He was going to tell the story. And I think it's just, it's important today to remember what sports journalism used to be and why it was so delightful and important and valuable. There was a point in time where we just didn't have the access that we do now. And so what you got was, I think, even more important in how it was delivered. And I think Feinstein, I just appreciate, like, those post guys, I hate to say it, but the old post guys, Kornheiser and Wilbon and Feinstein and the rest of those guys, are important to remember how it can be done and still done well, even if that's not the the norm anymore.
This is less about John, but just kind of to follow up on that, and I would love to actually ask him this question and would have known, and maybe he's answered versions of it somewhere that will pop up in the next couple of days, and I would be curious to listen. But, like, do you think we can do it the way they used to do it? Like, when I say we, I mean literally, like, us, those of us in these types of chairs, the one I'm sitting in now, the one that you sit in every morning, giving opinions. Because there is something to also, like, yes, there's a lot of access now that the athletes give us, that the programs give us, because there's cameras everywhere. But that's filtered how they want to filter it. That was the thing about Feinstein in the book and the other books that he wrote, whether it's Q School or whether it's the book he wrote where Nobody Knows Your Name on Minor League Baseball. Like, he's in there with his eyes doing his own journalism as opposed to relying upon the information given to us and confusing that for access. Do you think that it's still possible to do the kind of journalism, both reporting and opinion, that he did that in the modern media environment?
I think it's possible, but it would be really, really hard. I don't want to say impossible, but it's really hard because all the dynamics, all the levers of power have changed. You know, if you were to go to a book publisher and say, I want to spend a season with, I don't know, Tom Izzo at Michigan State, imagine what the expectations at Michigan State would be. Oh, you're going to get access? Well, just imagine what they think you are going to print. They're either going to say, no way, no, because you're not telling the real story because we can't allow that out there. Or they would say, sure, we need the publicity, but A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you're not writing any of this. It would be so cloaked in corporate, you know, expectations and litigation and paperwork and all that type of stuff. For people like us, that have microphones, I think it's important to not be drawn into the siren song of explosive, reactionary, hyper big opinions are the only way to go. Unfortunately, the social media algorithm warrants that, rewards that. And so the easiest way to get noticed is to be the boldest all of the time. But it's not true. It's just not the truth. And what the old guys should teach us, back then, they didn't have to be as crazy bold because it didn't have to be everything is attention seeking. You could tell stories, you could have opinions, but you just had to be well wired and well connected. And then it was valuable. Of course, there were fewer voices and there was a less democratic way of getting those voices out there. So that was not as good. But yeah, it's important to remember that you shouldn't always have to throw grenades. And the people that always throw grenades are not the ones to be listening to all of the time, because there's a reason they're doing so, to only gather attention, because that's what the algorithms help with. So I just think there are things to take away that we can all use, but it would be really hard to be the type of journalist that was important in 1985 today and still be important.
Damon Amendola, Sirius XM, Mad Dog Radio, 6 to 9 each and every weekday morning. Plus, you can check him out on YouTube. His YouTube live show on Sunday nights is great, and it's about to celebrate its one-year anniversary this weekend. He's also got a fun series, his 10 most intriguing prospects in the NFL draft. DA, most intriguing through your lens. I don't think that's like the top 10 players in this draft. You're going to find some guy with some wackadoodle story somewhere.
Well, yeah, that was the point of the list. But I will say, one guy, both you and I know well, Syracuse quarterback Kyle McCord. He's big, He's strong. He's a winner. He changed that program. And he's not one of the top three or four quarterbacks on most people's list. So he's probably a third or fourth rounder. And I think if you watched any Syracuse football last year, a 10-win season, he was best in big moments. And UNC running back Omarion Hampton, everybody's going to talk Ashton Gentry, but we're kind of in a golden era right now of the NFL running back again. People are valuing the back again, and I think Hampton does so many things so well. He runs with power, runs with speed, has breakaway speed, has good balance, good hands. People will latch in on Gentry, understandably so, but watch for Omarion Hampton. I think he's excellent.
Yeah, no, he's a really, really intriguing prospect. You want DA's full list, you can check it out on YouTube. Just search Damon Amendolara, Damonamendolara. God, you have a lot of letters in your name. Damon Amendolara.
A lot of vowels.
Can I buy a vowel? No, I'm too poor. Damon Amendolara on YouTube, if you want to check that out. DA, great to chat, my friend. We'll talk in better circumstances soon.
Okay, thanks, Hoff. See ya.
Damon Amendolara with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, a couple more follow-up thoughts on that. And then at 5 o'clock, Mark Bullock breaking down the latest in Commanders free agency.